Welcome to Planning for Retirement with Scott Nelson. Plan well, retire happy.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Planning for Retirement. Heard a couple of quotes this week that I thought might segue a little bit into introducing our guest today. It was Shakespeare who said, "A fool thinketh himself wise, and a wise man knoweth he is a fool." And then Einstein is reported to have said something like, "We all have our gifts. If a fish is judged by its ability to climb a tree, it's going to think itself inferior, you know, and we all have our skills and our abilities." So as we talk to people about retirement, it tends to be a broad-ranging discussion, but something that tends to be a common theme is health. And so I'm excited today to have as our guest, Pamela Mills. Pam is a dietitian and a client and a friend, and comes with a lot of expertise and knowledge that I simply don't have, at least probably better than I.
I don't know.
but we wanted to talk about staying healthy in retirement. So Pam, if you don't mind, give us your credentials and expertise and
how you got started. Yeah, a little bit about you.
All right. And thank you. Thank you for having me today. So I graduated from Idaho State University about 26 years ago in the field of dietetics and finished. So became a registered dietitian and a licensed dietitian here in Idaho, and then went on to work at Portneuf Medical Center, now Portneuf Medical Center, was Bannock Medical at that time, in clinical dietetics. So work in the hospital setting. And then actually transferred over to their diabetes center, where I then got my certification to become a certified diabetes care and education specialist. So I focused on diabetes care for a number of years. And then currently I am working at a smaller hospital in Malad, Idaho, where I do clinical at the hospital. I work at their long-term care. And then I also work at the clinic and focus on diabetes education and weight loss. So that's kind of the scope that I've worked through the years.
That's incredible.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah.
So as we're advising people on their way to retiring, we try to tell them, you got to take care of yourself. You want to have a quality retirement. That's not just about money. So I think Elise has a list of things that she's hoping to ask about. And when we were talking earlier, you were telling me about the three-legged stool, four-legged chair.
There's some kind of analogy. Yeah. Yes. Would you like me to start with that?
That would be great.
Okay. One thing, I do a lot of community presentations and education for anywhere from the kids in elementary school to the senior centers. So one thing that I have found that really kind of resonates with people is if we can compare our health to the stability of a chair. So I'll oftentimes bring both a chair that is great and in good condition overall, and a chair that has maybe a missing leg and some broken pieces in it, and just compare that to our health, where there's generally a chair is stable because of those four legs. As we sit on a chair, pretty comfortable, you can relax, you can maybe even fall asleep, and that chair is still going to hold us. If we're sitting on a chair that is missing a leg, or one's a little bit shorter, or there's parts broken, it just doesn't provide that stability for us. So when we look at overall health, I compare those legs to what I consider to be the four most important categories when it comes to determining our overall health. And that is what we eat, what we drink, our activity level or exercise, and our sleep. So there's kind of those four areas. And throughout everyone's life, we all have a shorter leg here and there. Sometimes we're wobbling on two legs. You have small children asleep and you might be on the floor. But if we can focus on those four areas, we tend to be able to age healthier. So that we look at what we're putting in our mouth. There was a doctor that once said, Dr. Lee, and I'm not sure of his first name, that said, oftentimes people dig their own grave with their teeth. And it just simply meaning that really what we put into our bodies makes a huge difference in our overall health. So what we eat, what we drink, our activity level, and our sleep really do make a difference. And they create that stable chair that helps us age a little bit more gracefully, hopefully.
So if we just talk about those four legs, the chair. So the first one is what we eat. Our clientele is older, either almost retired or retired. Mm-hmm. What types of foods and nutrients are most important when aging?
Kind of some key macros to look at.
Right.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So when we look at things, one area that I think ends up lacking a lot is people's protein content. And especially as we get older, sometimes their desire to eat a lot of meat or those protein containing foods aren't as appetizing. Carbohydrates, your starches and fruits and cereals, breads, grains, sugars, desserts, those type of things are much quicker and easier for a lot of people to make. They're readily available at the grocery store. So I see oftentimes people focusing a lot of their intake on those kind of foods, and that protein intake decreases. So when we look at what we're putting in our mouths, especially as the body ages, that protein ends up being a vital nutrient. Protein deals with immune system. It deals with healing. When I have people in the hospital with any type of wounds or injuries, it's that protein that actually helps with that healing. So it plays a huge role in the body. So, you know, muscle integrity. So all of those kind of things kind of tend to decrease as we age, unfortunately. But if we can keep that protein level up, it makes a big difference for us.
And would supplementing be something that they could do? I know that bread is just delicious and cereal. And so sometimes, you know, getting those meats and other sources of protein it's difficult. You have to cook it. You have to, you know, prepare. Right. With supplementing, I mean, I feel like that would be pretty simple.
And protein shakes or meats that are available are those.
Mm-hmm. And that is actually something that I've recommended to multiple people, especially ones that might say, you know, it's even a little bit more difficult for me to chew. As we really get elderly, sometimes that becomes a significant problem, or just it sits in my gut. It doesn't digest as well. I don't feel as good, that type of thing. But protein drinks are something that I encourage for quite a number of my clients, including those with diabetes or different chronic illnesses, that their benefit is to increase that protein level. So I think if people are able to find a protein drink that they tolerate well and that they enjoy, it actually is a good way to get some extra protein in.
So how does the one determine how much protein intake they should be getting?
So the levels kind of vary, especially with all of the different diets out there, from a ketogenic diet to just a normal healthy diet. But generally, the recommendation for most adults, if you took an ideal body weight, which I might not get into all of that, but generally, if they look at where their weight is supposed to be and what we call an ideal body weight based on their height, generally about 80% of that number is how much they should be getting in protein. So that's in grams. Most of the time, an easy way, a lot of us are getting about enough. If we can get about 25 to 30 grams per meal, then that tends to be fairly close to an adequate amount of protein for most people.
And that makes it pretty simple if you put it in terms of meal and how much.
Yes.
I heard before having 1 to 2. So the amount of protein is your weight. So 1 to 2 grams per pound.
Yes. And they've changed that. A lot of people that are doing macro counting will do 1 gram per weight. And generally, in my opinion, that should be that ideal weight, not actual weight. If someone is 180 pounds or 200 pounds, that is a lot of protein to try to consume. So it's very difficult for someone to get that much protein in their diet. So generally, if we can base that closer to that 80% to 100% of where the weight is maybe supposed to be, it's a little bit more reasonable.
I like that. Keep it to the meals, about 25 grams. That's good. Mm-hmm. And speaking of meals, about how many meals? So we have a lot of clients that have said that they eat 2 meals a day.
Yeah.
About 11 o'clock in the morning and then 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Is that typically normal when aging?
I see that a lot with people that are aging. And what I'll oftentimes tell them to do is if that is what fits into their schedule, then I try to get them to get some type of a nutritious snack, at least somewhere else during the day, so that they're getting a few more nutrients. Again, that protein, they're getting an increase in protein, whether they're doing maybe some hard boiled eggs or some string cheese or some cottage cheese with some fruit or a veggie tray. Maybe they don't consider it a meal, but they're getting a significant snack in there somewhere.
Great. And then the other thing with water intake, is that the next one we're drinking?
Yeah.
About how much water do you recommend?
I really do like to see people getting at least, that kind of standard of that 8 8-ounce glasses, that 64 ounces. I really like to see that be a minimum and see if they can't get greater than that 8 glasses of water a day. So that hydration is huge. We see problems with hydration that I think people trigger as something else. There's a lot of increased exhaustion, headaches, some dizziness. There's a lot of symptoms that people get when they're dehydrated, and most people tend to be dehydrated. So if your mouth feels dry, if you feel like, boy, I'm a little bit, if you feel thirsty, you're probably a little bit dehydrated from where you should be. I kind of push that. Let's do that minimum of that 64 ounces and try to go up from there even closer to, 90 or 100 ounces a day.
I think I'm a little dehydrated.
And it's easy as we get busy and go throughout the day. Sometimes that's something that people we bypass, that's not our front of our focus as we're busy or working or doing yard work or, just being active in whatever our lives bring. That's oftentimes not something that we think about. So that is one thing I've liked about the popularity of the water containers that we're carrying around and that are on our desk and that are wherever they might be, so that we can just kind of encourage that hydration.
That's great. So what are some specific dietary strategies to manage chronic conditions like diabetes and hypertension that become more prevalent in older age?
So one thing that I focus on where I am a diabetes specialist, that's primarily I see a lot of diabetic patients. And one thing that I really, again, we're focusing on that protein. And one thing as we talk about what we put in our mouths, if we can kind of, when it comes to fruits and vegetables and different food, if we think about the color spectrum, things that are darker are generally higher in nutrients. Spinach and kale and peppers that are dark red and orange and those things that are really dark in color bring a lot of vitamins and nutrients. So that's something that we kind of focus on is how do we get what is actually healthy to enter our mouth so that it's got a little bit of a pack there. Again, with diabetes, that focus becomes trying to decrease those overall carbohydrates, especially those simple carbohydrate foods. So trying to decrease some of those and again, increasing that protein. Carbohydrates, 90 to 100% turn into blood sugar. So that's just kind of a guarantee that we're going to see an increase in blood sugar with that, where protein, that metabolism is much slower and much less. So again, if we can increase that protein, then we tend to be able to stabilize that blood sugar. I'm a realist. I eat normal like everybody else. But if they can focus on, if I'm going to eat some carbohydrates, can I add some protein to it? So we really try to, let's add protein to every single meal. And we're going to add protein to pretty much every single snack as well, so that it slows down that digestion of carbohydrate and it slows down that blood sugar peak. So protein really becomes key. Something like hypertension, they tend to focus a lot more on the sodium intake. There's some varying studies that have come out by that. But when you look at something like high blood pressure, we just really try to focus on trying to stay further away from a lot of processed foods. that processing just brings in a lot of sodium so that it's very shelf stable. The more shelf stable something is, the more man-made it tends to be. If something doesn't ever go bad, then it's probably been messed with a lot in a lab. So we try to look at just focusing on foods that started as food and ended as food, so that actually have not been chemically modified so much. And it pulls down that sodium significantly, trying to eat more fresh, those meats that, you know, just your basic meats that don't have a lot of sodium added to them, or even those fruits and vegetables. Some people, it's just depending on their situation, maybe canned vegetables really are the easiest thing for them. They contain a lot of sodium. So sometimes we'll just say, you know, let's dump that, rinse those vegetables, and at least cook them in water instead of the sodium that they were in. So they can kind of do that to cut down a little bit of that, because sometimes, especially depending on the situation of the elderly individual or our younger individual, sometimes that type of thing is simply easier and is more realistic. So I really try to take into consideration their personal situation and not give them a goal to reach for that's not at all realistic, or something that they'll walk out and go, okay, that's going in the garbage. I'm not doing any of that. So we try to work around the situation that the individual's in. We're all very different, and focus on how can we just improve health from where we're at right now.
I'm a mom. So the easier and faster is better, but I never think about rinsing your canned veggies and cooking them in water. I might need to implement that into my cooking.
You know, and one thing that I find as well, even with younger individuals, is if we can even find a day to make things easier for us, cutting up those vegetables in advance. When we're cooking ground meat or chicken, cooking a larger amount of it at one time so that we can put it in some bags and put it in the freezer and have that, like my peppers, my onions frequently are chopped, put in a bag and put in the freezer, so that that type of stuff, same with hamburger or sometimes chicken, but different meats, I find that I tend to cook more if some of that stuff is done. We're busy. And so if we can do some of that preparation ahead, come home, cut all the vegetables up and have them in a baggie, then we tend to pull them out a lot more frequently than if they stay as a head of cauliflower and then we're throwing away the head of cauliflower because it's gone bad. So tends to get eaten a little bit quicker and better if we do some of that preparation when we have time.
I know along with the protein supplement, there's a lot of like the greens and the reds powder supplement as well. Mm-hmm. Would that be something that you would recommend, you know, if people are like, I really don't like.
Right. And some of those I've consumed. I don't necessarily recommend those as a complete substitute for actually eating those. I have a number of clients that have said, I drink the beet powder or I drink the greens, I feel so much better. And I think there's some validity to that. So that's certainly something that I wouldn't discourage.
Yeah. So we've talked about the two legs. The third one is the activity. Is that the third one? Mm-hmm. What types of physical activity would you suggest to aging adults who maybe haven't done a whole lot of activity? What are some activities that you would suggest for them to start with?
So generally, really what we're looking at, especially as we age, but throughout our life, is trying to maintain that muscle mass and trying to prevent injury. So we want to try to push off those falls and injuries as far as we can push them off. So basic walking is always a win. I don't think anybody can lose with that unless they've got something that makes it, you know, physically impossible for them to do that. Walking is great. So we have two different kinds of exercise. There's aerobic exercise that works the heart and the lungs. There's anaerobic exercise that works the muscles. So walking, riding a bike, on a treadmill, a stair stepper, that is strengthening the heart and the lungs, which is extremely important. So we want to incorporate that. I think sometimes, though, people forget about the importance of the strength training. And that has become extremely, extremely important as we age and throughout our life. Most of the people that come in to see me, I send them home with like a exercise band and go through some band exercises, some chair exercises, those things. It doesn't have to be difficult. Exercise can be very simple and something we can do from a chair, something that we can do while watching the news or sitting in our living room. It doesn't need to be something that's taxing. But if we can do those things, I'll show individuals how to use those bands with even the bicep curls, the leg lifts, some of the squats if their knees are okay to do things like that. But it makes a huge difference. There's a book that's called The Compound Effect. I love this book because what it talks about is the fact that each small thing that we do actually over time makes a huge, huge impact on our lives. You might not see a huge difference in, I guess, like the stock market, but you might not see a huge difference in a short amount of time. But as time goes by and as years go by, it's significant. So if people can spend 10 minutes and do some strength training, over time, they're going to start seeing that, wow, you know, those stairs are actually a lot easier for me. That walking, I have a lot more coordination. I'm not struggling to, you know, bring my groceries in from the car. It's fine for me to be down on the floor. That's another thing that we look at even as we age with different joint problems and depending on skeletally different things. If we can keep those muscles strong, I have multiple clients that say I ended up on the floor and I could not get myself up. That's not a good place to be. So if we can keep those muscles strong and practice getting down on the floor and making sure we can get back up, that's significant. And we see that in the hospital that with people that have fallen and spent a number of hours on the floor because they just cannot get themselves up. As much as I do encourage the walking and the aerobics to keep that heart and lung strong, that strength training is something that I really, really encourage with people that I meet with.
Sure.
Yeah. Are you doing strength training?
Kind of.
Do I need to bring you a band?
Push-ups and sit-ups and stuff, yeah. Right?
There you go. Those are the same. So anything that you can do that will build those muscles and maintain that muscle mass is extremely important. Even people will say, I do a lot of yard working, I'm raking, I'm shoveling, I'm lifting. Even those general activities that we do around the house fit in as that exercise and that strength training.
What about flexibility, yoga,
excellent,
stretching, that kind of stuff as well?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And things like that will help prevent those injuries as well. So the more that we can keep those muscles flexible, the less we're going to see those injuries come.
I was going to say, like with yoga and stretching, I feel like that's also a strength training because you're using all your stability, like you're stabilizing muscles. You're strengthening those as you're doing yoga or stretching because you stabilize your body and you're using those muscles.
Yes. Just working in the medical field, you just see a lot less chronic illness and a lot less injury in individuals that have tried their hardest to stay as active as possible. And some people view exercise as, boy, they want me to go to the gym. They want me to start running, or they set those goals, those New Year's goals of that are huge exercise goals that they really are not realistic for them in their mind anywhere. So if people can start out with just those small little steps, you know, I am going to use this band, or I'm going to do those. I'm going to do 10 sit-ups and 10 push-ups, or I am going to use these bands for 5 minutes and start there. Then we find that pretty soon that 5 minutes or those 10 sit-ups become very easy. And then we can move from there. I think the problem with exercise is we start with I better start walking for an hour or doing this for an hour. And then the next day we can't get out of bed and the exercise is over. So if we can start with something just small and maintain that throughout our lives, they'll find that muscle integrity remains a lot longer.
Compound.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, no, I can tell you stories, but I don't want to.
So I don't want to get too personal on here.
Well, I'll tell you this. So a grandson managed to talk me into going to karate class with him several years ago. And I'm pleased to report that I just earned my brown belt. So,
Oh, good for you.
next year it's black. So that's the goal.
Awesome. Good for
But
you. Well, that's great exercise. So that's awesome.
now I tell you that to tell you this. The sensei I'm studying with is 76 years old, and I would never mess with him. He still does pull-ups. He still does his push-ups. He still jumps rope. He is very fit and doing extremely well. Now, because he has done that as a profession and he's actually gone to competitions, he's got a rod in a shin that he broke in a fight in a competition, two artificial hips and an artificial knee. And so he's not as nimble as he once was, but I wouldn't mess with him. Nicest guy there is. Meanwhile, in his family, he's the 76-year-old. He's the most fit and physically healthy of any of them. And I think a good degree of that has to do with staying fit and healthy. For me, I found it helpful to go to that because they push me harder in karate training than I would push myself, but they're doing it in a structured way. And so they have never said, well, you have to be able to do the splits immediately, but we keep trying things of that nature. So anyway.
And I'll commend you for starting that because one thing that I sometimes see with people I meet with is that they almost think that there's an age that there's no sense starting now kind of thing, or that's just not practical at this point when it really is. It does not matter what age you are. Exercise can be incorporated, or if you've not exercised your entire life, it can be incorporated at any time and can be enjoyable and something that is hugely helpful. We talk a little bit as well, even with some of these chronic illnesses that blood pressure and diabetes and different things that we see sometimes creep up. And exercise is one of those things also that makes a huge impact on both blood sugar and blood pressure that you mentioned before. It brings both of those numbers down.
Yeah, no, I've seen that myself. I will tell you that I thought I had cemented in the notoriety of being the oldest white belt ever. And then at our belt testing that we had a couple of weeks ago, there was a 70-year-old couple there, white belts testing for yellow. He had had a massive aneurysm. The doctors just are chalking it up to a miracle that he was even there. He kind of had to relearn a lot of things. His stability was clearly way off, but they came and they started and they said they were feeling better as a result. Plus, it made me feel better that I wasn't the only old guy out there. But yeah,
That's
and
great,
it
though.
was a mindset, I think.
And it goes across all ages. I think it's scary to think about trying something like that, but it's still scary, you know? And I mean, I work out, but thinking of trying something new is always scary. When I saw that, 'cause I actually went to the belt test and I saw that couple and I was like, that is so cool that they are starting that.
So, Inspiring, a little inspiring.
very,
Really.
no, age itself is not the barrier. I think it's mindset,
It is definitely.
but you got to start someplace. And you got to start someplace. So, talking about your four-legged chair of health, let's talk about sleep for a minute. I'm married to somebody that has trouble with that one.
So sleep, and we were talking a little bit before. Well, I don't know if sleep is ever a great thing, even throughout any phase of life. Teenagers never get any, moms never get any, dads. It just, I think there's just a lot of things that impact sleep. But as we age, where we're talking about kind of that retirement age, recommendations are still that we try to get at least 7 hours of sleep at night. And I think sometimes there's a lot of things that impact age with sleeping. Some of those aches and pains that we might feel a little bit. Our mind sometimes just, I think at any age, sometimes doesn't shut off and let us relax and be able to sleep. And so sometimes people end up needing to get some type of a prescription to help with that, to actually help calm the body down so that they can sleep. But some of the recommendations that I would provide as far as the nutrition standpoint is really making sure that we're not eating super late at night and then trying to lay down and go to bed, as that sometimes, especially if you have some acid reflux that you struggle with or some of that type of thing, that tends to keep us up a lot at night. Also, just going to bed with a full stomach can sometimes irritate that. We have a lot of people that consume a good amount of caffeine through the day. So trying not to make sure that that happens, you know, and not as much in the afternoon and evening. So we try to push that if that's something that they are going to consume. We try to do that earlier in the day and not later in the day. And even that exercise and stretching, things that we can do. I like meditation, and that's something that if you can kind of calm the body down to allow it to relax, I think meditation is pretty effective in allowing the mind to shut off and manage the thoughts so that you can actually sleep. The reason that falls in such an important category is that sleep is primarily when the body takes time to heal. It's very important that we try to get a good lump of time to allow that body, those hormones, things kind of settle down just a little bit when our body sleeps. And so it does allow that time to heal and recover and repair. So when we're lacking a lot of sleep, we tend to get more ill. The immune system is not as good. Injuries tend to be more prevalent, and illness just ends up, you know, chronic illnesses tend to peak a little bit in those that have very, very poor sleep, and our mood is definitely not great. Those type of things impact us greatly. So if we can look at pushing those meals, that caffeine, a little bit further away from the time that we're going to bed, we're not talking technology, but they talk a lot about technology's impact on sleep and the lights that our phones put off and different things that just wake that brain up and keep us from sleeping. So if we can push the phone away a little bit further, that those meals and caffeine intake a little bit, a few hours before we go to bed, and just try to relax that mind, it tends to improve our sleep significantly.
They actually now have, I'm not sure with Android, I'm sure that they have the same thing, but on the iPhone, they have your help, you know, little heart icon, and you can set your bedtime. And so then it'll give you a reminder, hey, your bedtime's coming.
Right.
And then you can set everything to silence or, you know, just do not disturb or whatever it is. But it'll automatically do that if you set your schedule. And I started doing that, and I love it.
And
quiets everything and
time. You know, I chuckle with myself because for some reason, it's probably very normal. My mind comes awake at night and I start thinking about everything. And so I've started actually putting my phone across the room. So I'm plugging it in across the room because I tend to pull it up and go, oh goodness, I wonder about this. And then pretty soon I'm reading some article at 2 o'clock in the morning instead of sleeping. So found that I, you know, had to push that a little bit further away so that it's not even a temptation to do that. But some of those little tips or setting a bedtime is a good way to just shut that stuff off so that it doesn't impact our sleep.
Awesome. Well, Pam, we so appreciate your time. So we're going to work on our four legs of our chair.
Awesome.
What we put in our bodies, we're going to get about 80% of the grams of protein of our ideal body weight and make sure we eat more dark colored things. But I'm guessing from what I heard that chocolate iced cake donuts, even though they probably don't qualify.
Not at bedtime. No.
During the day.
Right.
I'll tell Julie. We want to make sure that we're staying well hydrated. The rule of thumb that somebody told me was like 2 ounces of water for each pound of body weight, something like that.
And you can do that. Some will even try to drink almost like that protein content where they're getting about 1 ounce per body weight. And that's a recommendation that floats around.
So stay hydrated. We want to stay active. So we need to have some type of routine that we like that incorporates aerobic and strength training so that we're keeping our joints and muscles fit and keeping our heart and lungs going, and then try to get at least 7 hours of sleep and do what we need to for our routine so we can get there. And that should help us in as much as possible to stay healthy for as long as we can.
That is the goal. That's all of our goals.
Cool. Well, I've learned a lot today. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course.
Post this up on our website. For those watching, if any of you find this helpful, Pam, if somebody wanted to ask you a question, is that okay?
Yes, certainly.
So if you wanted to provide us with the contact information you want, we'll put it in our show notes.
Okay.
Click there and reach out and get some actual professional opinions on their health and health practices. If you find this useful, share with a friend. Thanks, everyone. We're here for you, helping you plan for your retirement.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Pam. That was fun.
You bet.
If you found this information useful, please share it. If there is something you hear that raises a question, you can sign up for our free consultation as well as sign up for our free newsletter. Visit askscottnelson.com to sign up. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you plan well, you can retire happy.
The information provided is for educational purposes only and is not intended as investment advice for anyone. All information discussed is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. The views presented today are those of SLN Financial Incorporated and do not necessarily represent the views of Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC. The opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not constitute financial, legal, or tax advice. Please consult your financial professional before executing any financial strategy. Investment advisory and financial planning services are offered through Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Alpha Star and SLN Financial Incorporated are independent entities.